love of baseball.
I see great things in baseball.
The Marlins Hot Stove with Kyle Seeloff is on 1230 The Zone and 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Hey, good to be back with you Tuesday, January 23rd, and this is the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Brought to you, as always, by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico is so easy, a caveman can do it. Kyle Seeloff back with you in the 940 Wins Marlins Radio Network studios this evening. Our producer tonight is Roy Perez, and we've got a packed hour on the way. Chatting with Todd Hollinsworth, whom you all know from Fox Sports Florida, in just a minute. The seventh-ranked prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, and one of the newest Marlins, Nick Neidert. He'll join us shortly. And to round things out this evening, Mike Rosenbaum of MLB Pipeline and MLB.com will join us to pick apart the Marlins' moves this winter and provide some terrific insight on how the Marlins' current top 30 prospects shape up. So pitchers and catchers report on February 14th. The first full squad workout is the 19th. The first Grapefruit League game is on the 23rd, so we are inching closer to the start of spring training up in Jupiter, and it'll certainly be here before you know it, folks. In the meantime, don't forget the Marlins Annual Fan Fest is on February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Marlins Park. Free, open to the public, players, coaches, executives, they will all be there. You know the drill, so come on out and join us again. Fan Fest is February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Marlins Park. All right, no time to waste here this evening. Let's get right to it. Out to the phone line tonight, where our first guest of the evening is standing by. He is one of the best, always has some terrific insight to provide. Fox Sports Florida color analyst Todd Hollinsworth is with us to kick things off this evening. Holly, thanks so much for joining us. It is always a pleasure to have you on. Happy New Year to you and the family. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing fantastic, Kyle. I appreciate you having me on. It's great to be with you. A lot of excitement for the 2018 season, and I'll tell you what, it's been a good start to the new year. Everybody here in the Hollinsworth household is doing fantastic, and we're getting ready for some baseball.
As are we all. Hey, look, there's a ton I want to talk to you about, and we'll get to it as much as we can. But first, let me get your thoughts on the Marlins offseason to date and everything that's transpired.
Well, it's a tough question. It's a deep question, but I'll do my best to answer it. I think that on a lot of levels, and if I were to put on my fan hat, I'd probably tell you, yeah, I mean, it stings a little bit to watch Giancarlo Stanton leave and to watch Marcelo Zuna leave. From the I've been in baseball my whole life hat, I certainly understand what's going on, and I certainly understand the restructuring of an organization and the desire to rebuild and to refranchise and to build from the bottom up. It makes all the sense in the world. Those aren't hard decisions to make. They're actually pretty easy ones because, again, this Marlins franchise needed to be put back together again. It had a lot of issues all the way down through the minor leagues.
Does this new direction and devotion to building a first-class organization from top to bottom excite you?
Oh, it excites me like nothing else. Listen, this is coming from somebody who has done this as a player. I did it with the Los Angeles Dodgers in my early 20s. I did it recently in Chicago. That's how I ended up here in South Florida down with Miami. I came through Chicago, which was home for me for over 15 years. Being a part of the Chicago Cubs organization as the pre- and post-game host there and doing some other things with the Cubs, I lived through their own transition to the Ricketts family and their great ownership group and to the winning formulas that they've been able to put together. So, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that I've been able to, you know, pick up along the way, a lot of things that I've watched very closely. I know that there is, I think for the fans probably, maybe the stings of some losses, but I think in a lot of ways, if you can change the way you watch baseball and kind of put on your learning cap and say, okay, we're watching this organization grow. How do we want it to grow? How big do we want it to get? Where do we want it to go? Do we want it to be a pitching organization, an offensive organization, a combination of youth and at some point veterans through free agency? I mean, there's just so many different creative ways that you can build a franchise in today's game. I'm really excited to see. I guess we'll call it step one or phase one.
Well, there's been a lot of change, but how about the job Derek Jeter, who in his own right is a brilliant baseball mind, has done assembling a baseball operations department that is led by Michael Hill, who returns, and now Gary Denbo, who's well-regarded as the architect of some of those great Yankee teams.
Highly respected. I'll tell you what, competing against Jeter, I think anybody knows his character and what he's all about. And, you know, one thing I can promise this, and it's an easy promise, he didn't come to South Florida to lose. I know that for a fact, having competed against him throughout my career. This is going to be a winning franchise, and it's going to be a sustainable winning franchise at some point. but he had to make some changes, some pretty obvious changes, at least in my opinion. You look at what this organization was, you look at their salary. You know, I even tell people today, I said, here's the deal. He had one of the best offenses in baseball, one of the best offensive second halves in baseball by a few individuals. Everybody stayed healthy, and you had 77 wins. Yeah, you say, oh, well, you know, we just needed a couple starters, maybe a couple more answers down in the bullpen. Yeah, but what's the going rate for what, number one and number two? I think the biggest issue here, and I hate to kind of bring this back up again, but when I look over this organization now, having been on board for 2017, which is one full season, and, you know, living through the loss of Jose Fernandez, I actually still believe that that is much bigger than, you know, some of the losses that were sustained this offseason by the trades. You know, Jose just represented a bona fide number one that could go up against anybody around baseball, and you knew you had a chance to win that day. That is hard to get. Listen, Stanton had an incredible season. Marcell Ozuna had just a wonderful season, consistent as anybody in the game of baseball. But Jose Fernandez was, in my opinion, a bigger stinger, if you'll call it that, as far as the organization is concerned. It probably put him in a position where, with all of that offense, you still needed elite starting pitching, and you were going to have to add substantial dollars to a payroll to even think that you would have a chance to, say, win this division.
Fox Sports Florida analyst Todd Hollinsworth joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Hey, Holly, let me go back to something real quick that you mentioned. You mentioned when you were younger in your playing career in Los Angeles, you had gone through a similar transition, right? A organization that was looking to build. Did you go through one by chance as a veteran player in your career, and how did you handle that?
Well, I wasn't really a veteran. It's funny, even those circumstances that were in Los Angeles, you know how the game of baseball works. You become a veteran rather quick. You might be a 22-year-old rookie, add 3 or 4 years, and all of a sudden they start throwing around the world veteran, and you're like, wait a minute, what? I'm 26 years old and I'm a veteran? Well, guess what? It's kind of like Christian Yelich right now and JT Realmuto, if you sit back and think about it for a second. Really, the focus has to be on what you're looking to accomplish, and it's as simple as that. I tried to internalize a lot of the things that were going on around me as opposed to externalizing. If you start to absorb all the noise, everything that's going on with ownership groups, how this is changing hands, what's this new group going to do, what's their perspective, what do they think of me, what are first impressions? I mean, there's a million questions you can, you know, kind of cloud your vision with. Personally, I just said, you know what, I'm going to go out there and treat this like a new opportunity and a fresh start. Like, I've got to wow a new ownership group. When I first got to Los Angeles and got drafted in 91, I wanted to wow the O'Malleys. They're the owners. They're the owners of this team. I wanted to play great for them. I wanted to play great for Tommy Lasorda, and I wanted to get to the big leagues and have a big league career. Those were my dreams. And then obviously included the O'Malleys. Now that changed. Well, with that change came, I suppose, a fresh perspective and a new opportunity to say, guess what? Everything I've done, it's fine and dandy, but I need to re-impress my new ownership group. And I certainly, I wouldn't say I was necessarily 100% like, hey, I'm going to wear, you know, the Dodger blue forever. But the idea was is that this is where I am, and I wanted to just give them everything I had. I felt like if they were going to trade me at some point, well, handling myself with the, in a respectful nature and with the idea that, you know what, I'm just going to go out there and be an example to the guys around me of how to handle this the right way and just get after it and play ball. You know, I felt like, you know, if I got traded in a year, you know, the organization that would be trading for me would really want me because they'd say, hey, listen, this guy handled himself like a pro during some, you know, some tough times with the team.
Todd Hollinsworth joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Back to your point about, I guess it really doesn't matter how old you are to be a veteran, but how important will it be, Holly, for some of these veteran players, you could say, in the clubhouse this season to set an example and set the standard for some of these younger guys will have an opportunity to see that might be coming up through the minor leagues as prospects now into the Marlins organization?
Kyle, great question. I would use the word vital to have those types of players that can be those kinds of leaders. You're going to have to be able to kind of clean up that focus, the idea of let me put it to you this way, what everybody's focusing on. And I think the idea really starts with the guys who have been in the clubhouse the longest and have been on the team the longest. That's really where it goes. It's called veteran leadership and where that veteran leadership leads you. So leading by example, leading, you know, both vocally in the clubhouse, even on the field. These are going to be vital to, you know, the maturation process of these younger players. You know, and some of these players are going to go on and have nice careers. Some of them won't. I mean, some of these guys are going to get an opportunity, and maybe they won't capitalize on it. But, you know, you talk about building a Marlins culture. I mean, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. You certainly want to bring or have. I personally believe you still have a lot of guys in this organization that you can build around. And if you're going to build around those guys, you want to make sure that everything is in line. as far as where their thoughts are, where their mind is each and every day. And you certainly don't want them wishing for greener pastures somewhere else if, in fact, you know, they're looked upon to be your veteran leadership of that ball club.
We are doing a prospect show of sorts tonight, and the Marlins' seventh-ranked prospect, Nick Neidert, will join us coming up shortly. But, hey, in December alone, the Marlins acquired 9 prospects in exchange for Giancarlo Stanton, Marcell Ozuna, and D. Gordon. This commitment to building really goes back to last season, Holly, when the Marlins traded the Danny Echevarria to Tampa. I would imagine there's a real good chance, and let me know if you agree with me here, that we see some of these prospects, depending on their development, make some type of impact in the major leagues this season.
Well, why not, Kyle? I think it's absolutely possible. And here's the deal. You create opportunity. If you're one of these young men who's been brought into the Marlins organization, you're screaming, yes, I have a chance. I mean, this is what it's all about. We used to talk about these things when I was coming up. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I remember a few of these conversations with Cliff Floyd and Rondell White. We had them in when we were in winter ball, and we kind of talked about, you know, what it was like. You know, everybody thinks, you know, you want to get drafted by the best organization, you know, that has the best record at the major league level. I say, you know, when I was a kid coming, everybody wanted to get drafted by the Yankees. Well, truth be told, you really didn't want to get drafted by the Yankees. Ask me why, I'll tell you. Because, you know, your chances to get to the big leagues, well, you better be Derek Jeter or you're not going to get there. And I guess that's the point. Sometimes coming up with the Montreal Expos, there's more of an opportunity because, you know what, they're extending more of an opportunity to their younger players. And I think that's exactly where the Marlins are at right now. So if I'm a young Marlin player, I'm telling you right now, I'm doing double workouts already this offseason to get myself in the absolute best shape, best mental preparation that I can get myself into going into spring training because I'm fighting for playing time. I'm looking to impress Don Mattingly and his staff. I'm looking to impress Derek Jeter. I'm looking to open up eyes and, well, I don't know, maybe beat the clock to the big leagues. If I'm supposed to be there when I'm 24, I'm looking to be there when I'm 23. Why? Because there's some opportunity there right now. And I'm telling you, who doesn't want to get to the big leagues as quickly as possible? These jobs, there's not very many of them. You got to capitalize when you get the opportunity. And I think for a lot of these prospects, you're right, Kyle. You know, you get some things done maybe in the minor leagues. Maybe it's not right away in spring training. But I promise you, that phone call, that phone's going to be picked up to the minors, and there's going to be some names that are going to be called down there, and some opportunities are going to be extended at the major league level for a lot of these younger players to come up and show the world what they can do.
Take me back to when you were younger and just drafted by the Dodgers. What do you remember from your days of being a prospect? And I would imagine that constant pressure of ultimately wanting to be successful and making it to the major leagues.
Yeah, good question. I haven't really thought on that too much. It's been so many years, but I think back to, you know, much like I just described to you, you know, the realization I came to the Dodger organization in a period of time when they were struggling with, you know, even some of their free agents. So they had a recommitment to their minor league system. Well, guess who showed up? So I was thrilled with that idea. Yeah, let's have a recommitment to the minor league system because I just got in it. So that was fantastic. It certainly created maybe a few more opportunities for me. I was just excited to play. But the one thing that I realized, and I think that this is really starting to develop in the Marlins organization, and I say this an awful lot. You'll hear me say it during the broadcast sometimes when we talk about our prospects. Internal competition. We love to watch baseball because team's got the ball, you know, that team's visiting and, you know, the Marlins are trying to beat them that day. And, you know, maybe there's some storylines there. You want to see a Bryce Harper home run or, you know, you want to see Jose Ureña throw one of his best games yet. So, I mean, there's different things that you kind of go to the ballpark to do. But the internal competition that I'm talking about is just kind of focusing on beating out the guy that stands next to you in spring training. Position battles. They're the best. And that's what you realize when you're in the minor leagues. You're not really competing. I mean, I guess you are. You've got to have the vehicle, the game itself, to put up your numbers and to certainly improve. But in a lot of ways, the competition that you are, you know, trying to beat out is the guy that's standing next to you. If you're in AAA, you better look to your left and to your right. If you're the center fielder, not only because you're the center fielder and you're in charge out there, but because you're competing with those two individuals to get to the big leagues, right? You want to know when Derek Jeter picks up the phone that your name is the one that's being called out, AAA, and say, hey, listen, we need a guy in the outfield. We've got, you know, a week's worth of at-bats here because we had one of our outfielders go down. So that internal competition is huge, and I embraced it. And it's a story that I tell people all the time. I wasn't the first pick of the Dodgers. I was a sandwich pick. I think I was like the 76th pick overall for the Dodgers, something like that, back in the 1991 draft. And I thought, boy, okay, you know, I'm in a good spot. I'm the first guy taken with the organization, second round pick, and I'm an outfielder. And that lasted for about 4 days because they did the exact same thing next year. They took an All-American wide receiver, Michael Moore, out of the University of California as part of the organization. So there you go. There's that internal competition I'm talking about. I got 1 year with the team before I had built-in competition through the draft.
Marlins Fox Sports Florida analyst Todd Hollinsworth joins us here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Holly, I ask a lot of guys this, but I'm curious to see whom you mentioned. Who was most influential to you in your career growing up? And, you know, is there anybody to this day you still credit for a lot of your successes?
Well, and there is, and you'll hear me reference this a lot on the Marlins broadcast just because he's also wearing a Marlins uniform. And that's where it started. I started with Tim Wallach. Tommy Lasorda strategically put me next to Tim, put me next to Eli in Los Angeles. And it was only for a year that I was with him. But again, I was kind of like I was his little brother, and he had the responsibility of basically raising me my first year in Los Angeles. So I give him a lot of credit. I have, you know, guys that, you know, certainly helped with that. I was around Mike Piazza and Eric Karros and a lot of guys like that, certainly in Los Angeles, Todd Rolls of the world, as my career expanded. And, you know, that leap that I told you about, it's such an odd leap. I find it so interesting. You go from being a young man. Derek Jeter could even talk to you about this, you know, 22, 23 years old, as you start to accomplish something. And, you know, by the time you're 26, everybody looks at you like you're a veteran. It's very, very interesting for, you know, perspective. But, you know, I get to Colorado. I think I was 28 years old by the time I got to Colorado, and you had the Larry Walkers of the world that were out there. I learned an awful lot from him. And so I'm just an awful lot of guys. But I think, you know, my formative years, my early years, you know, I really do give a lot of credit to Tim Wallach and, you know, the guys that a lot of the veterans on that Dodgers team.
Got a couple of more minutes with Marlins analyst on Fox Sports Florida, Todd Hollinsworth, here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. All right, well, we've talked about a lot of the changes that we've seen this offseason. We chat a little bit about what it's like to be a prospect, some of the prospects that the Marlins have acquired this offseason. But let's chat a little bit, Holly, about some of these guys that had sensational 2017 seasons. Is there anybody that immediately comes to mind that you think is poised to really keep it rolling and get better in 2018 for the Marlins?
Well, that's a great question. I look at this roster right now. I certainly was impressed, and Jose Ureña obviously comes right off the top of right off the top of my mind. I was so impressed with not only his ability to establish himself as a starter at the major league level, a good starter, a quality starter, a top three starter in just about anybody's rotation, but the improvements that he made throughout the season. And I do talk about this one. I think it's one that really stands out to me. You know, his fastball command was always such a key. You know, obviously good changeup, good slider, handles both the lefties and the righties very well. He's not a huge strikeout guy, does have high velocity, but his poise on the mound. And the one thing, I think back to a time in July and August. And July was a little bit of a rough month. You know, the All-Star break, he came back out. He had like a 4.78 ERA. I think it was his worst ERA of any month that year. But he was really looking for like a bounce back or a change or an adjustment that kind of had to be made in order to kind of get him back in line. And, you know, I tell people about it. It was pretty fun to watch. You know, back in the first half of the season, his two-seam fastball was erratic to the point where he couldn't use it consistently. He would spray it all over the strike zone. In fact, he was plunking right-handed hitters left and right. A few of them thought that it was on purpose. I certainly, watching him every day, knew that it wasn't on purpose. He just had an erratic two-seam fastball that he could not command. And so he got to a point where he just kind of scrapped it and was using the four-seamer, and he was using his secondary pitches as well. And that was the adjustment he made after that slow July moving into August, which were some very, very important ball games. Remember, the Marlins were pushing pretty hard to get back to 500, to get over 500, and to get into that wild card chase. And Ureña kind of redeveloped that two-seam fastball. All of a sudden, he's throwing it for strikes. He's not throwing the four-seamer anymore. He's using it as his primary fastball. He's back in. He has a great month. He's got a sub-3 ERA in August, and he's pitching in big ball games. He was fantastic. Obviously, he was fantastic on the road. Offensively, JT Realmuto had just such an impressive year, both behind the plate and offensively for somebody who took such a workload. I know it was like 140-plus ball games behind the plate. Watching the adjustments that he made, and obviously Christian Yelich, I think this could be a real breakout season for him if he embraces it and, in fact, is in a Marlins uniform. You know, you got to get all those things kind of put to bed. And I will also throw out Justin Bour. Who isn't excited about Justin Bour with the idea that maybe he gets 155 games over at first base and can improve or even exceed the fantastic season he had last year, hitting lefties, hitting for power, just complete and total presence in the box. So there are some definite offensive forces still with this organization.
And I know there's been a lot of changes this offseason, but hey, as you just mentioned, and a lot of these guys returning, I think there's still a lot to look forward to. On the way out the door, Todd, year number two coming up for you in the TV booth, but as you reflected this offseason, you are a baseball guy through and through. Just how enjoyable was that for you last season, and how much are you looking forward to doing it again?
I love what I do, and I love this organization. I love the Marlins. I love the fact that we're building and that something is kind of starting back out fresh. It was such a joy to watch Giancarlo Stanton. You know, you get close to these guys, and that's the one thing that I really did appreciate. I was over at MLB Network, and I was doing stuff with the Cubs, and I got the privilege of being down on the field for a lot of the playoffs, the World Series, and everything in 2016 with them. But it was almost like a step farther this year to watch the process and for fans out there to really understand what a privilege it is for me. And I'm a 12-year vet. You know, I did some things in my career that I'm very, very proud of. Obviously, our 2003 championship team, my rookie of the year season, and some really solid seasons in between. I just really appreciated the opportunity to be around the batting cage and to talk with these guys, to watch them grow. To think of the season that Stanton had, right? You know, MVP-type season. He's hitting so much for so much power. His at-bats are becoming better and better on a daily basis. And to watch the swing adjustments, and to have the privilege to talk to him and to, you know, the openness that they had with me, and to earn that, I'll use the word respect, even back from players. And players generally give it to each other pretty naturally. But, you know, when you're a broadcaster, there's, you know, maybe some hesitation and reservation being the new guy, from them. But they trusted me right away. They knew that I was a baseball guy all the way to my core. And I was only there to really promote them and to really talk about their adjustments and their advancements, throughout the year. And it was so much fun to watch Stanton really grow as he, kind of closed his stance and moved off the plate and slowed his hands down, and, all the little adjustments. And how about the consistencies of Marcell Ozuna? And what a pleasant human being to be around each and every day, is that smile on his face, whether he was 0-for-4 the night before or 3-for-4 with a couple home runs. Same guy showed up every day. And the one question that was, told to me early on about Ozuna is the consistency. He's going to wow you. He's going to play like a top three outfielder in the game of baseball. But then he has these moments where he just gets lost and he may not recover. That never happened. There were a couple of moments maybe where he got tested, but he just got back to the basics of what he does well, using the middle of the field, being a good two-strike hitter, and never backing off defensively. So many good things. D. Gordon in the stolen bases. Who didn't love the dynamic between D and Stanton last year at the top of that lineup? It was fun one to talk about each and every night, whether D was going to go or he was just going to gain enough attention to the pitcher so that Stanton could hit a home run. I mean, so many things were going on. And like I said, it was a really, really exciting first year for me. I was very proud of my efforts to grow and to be better. And I look forward to the challenges to, again, this year, grow and be better. That's how I live my life. I lived it every year of my career. And I feel like if I'm blessed to do 20 years in the booth, that as I enter year number 20, I'll still be telling myself, all right, what am I going to do better this year than I did the year before?
Holly, you are the man. We always appreciate the insight. Thanks so much for the time tonight. We will see you up in Jupiter in just a few short weeks. Thanks again, Todd.
It's a privilege, Kyle. Thanks so much, man. We'll see you soon.
Terrific stuff with Todd Hollinsworth. Always appreciative of his time, and we'll be sure to catch up with Holly throughout the course of spring training just to check in, get some of his observations from up in Jupiter. Time for our first break, but stay with us because when we return, Nick Neidert, the Marlins' seventh-ranked prospect in the system, newly acquired from the Seattle Mariners organization, joins us on your home for Marlins baseball, 1230 WBZT, The Zone at 940 Wins.
Keep your hands on the hot stove with the Miami Marlins' Kyle Seeloff. 1230 The Zone and 940 Wins. Miami Sports.
Hey, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Brought to you as always by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote. Geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Again, thank you to Todd Hollinsworth for joining us just a few minutes ago. A long way to go here tonight. The Marlins' seventh-ranked prospect, Nick Neidert, joins us in just a moment over the phone. But first, got to let you know that Marlins season tickets are now available. Whether you're interested in the full season or just a handful of games, the Marlins have a season ticket option to fit your needs. To learn more about their flexible season ticket plans and how you can secure a spot in the action next season, visit Marlins.com/season tickets. Our second guest of the evening joins us now over the phone from his home in Georgia. He is the 7th-ranked prospect, according to MLB.com. It is a pleasure to be joined this evening by the newly acquired right-hander, Nick Neidert. Nick, it's great to have you with us. You were a part of a trade back on December 7th that saw D. Gordon go to Seattle in exchange for yourself, Robert Duggar, and Chris Torres. Again, thank you for joining us. Did the trade this winter come as a shock to you at all?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a shock, but at the same time, I knew it was good for the Mariners, good for me, good for Miami, and it was just, I'm really excited to hit the ground running and be a Marlin.
I would imagine it's not something you contemplate much coming up through the minor leagues being traded, is it?
No, not really, because you just go day by day and you kind of plan out your season, the next season and everything, and who you're going to live with and stuff. And then just by one phone call, everything kind of changes and you're in a scramble to find out information.
What was your immediate reaction?
I was surprised, but at the same time, I was very excited because I knew it was a door opening for new opportunities.
Nick Neidert, the newest Marlin, the 7th-ranked prospect in the Marlin system, according to MLB Pipeline, MLB.com, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, Nick, for Marlins fans out there that don't know, what type of pitcher are you?
I would definitely say I'm a competitor on the mound. I had a couple coaches call me the French Bulldog because I'm smaller, so I'm a miniature bulldog. But I just love going out there and trying to be the best version of myself and putting everything that I have into each and every game.
You got a fastball, a curveball, a changeup, and a slider, to my understanding. How important has that deep arsenal been to you in your career?
It's been really good. So if I don't have a certain pitch on a day, I have those other pitches to help me out and get me out of tough jams.
I mean, I'm sure you've always had the fastball, but have you developed any of these pitches in your professional career in just a few short years?
Yeah, my slider was probably on the bottom of my list if I were to rank them, and it's come such a long way in the past 2 full seasons, and I've been working with really great pitching coaches that have helped that development. I'm really looking forward to this next season to see how it plays.
Hey, what area of your game would you say needs the most improvement moving forward?
I would definitely say not really backing down from anyone. Don't let, if you're in a tough situation, to kind of back you into a corner, just kind of push through it and keep working and going after people.
What pitch do you think needs the most development this upcoming season to continue to round out yourself?
I would definitely say my slider, but I definitely believe that it has gotten a tremendous amount better.
Nick Neidert, the newest Marlin, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Nick, you were drafted in the 2nd round back in 2015 out of Peachtree Ridge High School in Georgia. How would you assess your growth through 55 career professional games to date?
Well, I've definitely learned and experienced a lot of things in those 55 outings, but I would just say my composure and command and basically everything that I know as a pitcher has gotten sharper, better, and I've learned a lot of new things while doing it.
I would ask you this. You mentioned command. How important is that command in your ability to work around the strike zone? I know last season in high A, you averaged right around 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings to just 1.5 walks. How important is that for you?
Command's really big for me because it sets up other pitches, whether it's later in the at bat or later in the game, but it also helps you get weak contact and quicker out so you can go deeper into the game.
Not sure how close you guys may be, but did you have a chance to chat with Robert Duggar, whom you played with last season when you were both traded to the Marlins this offseason, and what did the two of you make of this new opportunity?
Yeah, he sent me a text right when he heard he got traded alongside me, and we're both really excited to get into the organization and basically just learn their system, meet new people, and just go forward as being a Marlin.
I have no idea, but do you know anybody in the Marlin system already, whether it was through the minor leagues, growing up, high school, anything of that nature?
I know a couple guys, Pablo Lopez, Lucas Schiraldi. They got traded over there, and I was actually teammates with them for most of this past season, and I reached out to both of them saying, hey, we're going to be teammates again. And I know they were really excited to hear the news of all three of us coming over there, but it's been really cool to pick their brains about the Marlins system and what their regime is.
Have you looked at everything that's transpired throughout the Marlins organization this offseason? Of course, Derek Jeter, now the CEO, Gary Denbo, who's been the architect of some of those great Yankees teams, alongside Michael Hill, are really in charge of the baseball operations side of things. Are you a real baseball nut? Do you look at that kind of stuff? Do you kind of evaluate what's happened and just kind of get your feet wet in that regard?
Yeah, I know they've made a lot of new changes and adjustments, but I believe that everything they're doing, they're going about it in the right way, and it may have some controversy in the end, but when it comes down to it, they're doing what's best for the Marlins, and I believe that they're doing a really good job.
What would you say you most learned from your time in the Mariner system, whether it was low A all the way up to double A last year?
Just first pitch strikes and never giving up at the end of the day. You're going to have another outing. You're going to have another pitch, and it's just letting the small things go so you can grow at the end of the day.
Hey, Nick, who have you talked with from the Marlins, and have you already been presented with a workout and spring training-type plan in advance of spring training to make sure when you arrive for camp you are ready to hit the ground running?
Yeah, I've talked to a couple guys in the front office just kind of explaining a little bit about the Marlins system, how everything works. So I'll get down there in 2 weeks, and then I'll really get to see what the Marlins system is about.
Have they told you where you will start 2018, Nick, or have those conversations not been had?
They haven't happened yet, but I'm definitely excited for the new venues that I'll be playing at, considering we're in completely different leagues than all the Mariners, but I'm definitely excited to see where everything ends up and where I'll be this year.
Nick Niner joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, I read an article where you were quoted as saying you've been doubted ever since you were a little kid. You made reference just a few minutes ago to being a Bulldog. What drives you the most, man? What gets you going?
I would say the people that have doubted me and put me down in the past, saying I was too small and not going to really become anything, and just proving them wrong and saying, hey, look at where I am now, and I'm still fighting and getting better every single day.
That's something you carry with you every time you take the mound? You think about those people?
I want to say every single time, but when I need a little bit more confidence and another boost during the game, I definitely do think about that, and it just kind of gives me an extra gear.
Who's been most influential to you in your baseball career, Nick?
Over the years or during Pro Bowl?
Either or, whether it was somebody, whether it was your dad, you know, anybody, growing up in T-ball, all the way up through high school, professional ball.
I would say as a whole, it's been my dad, because he's been my rock behind everything, and he's always believed in me, and he always says, hey, you can do it, man. If you just put your mind to it, your heart to it, you're going to be able to do it. So he's been my rock behind all of that.
Do you have an opportunity to chat with him most times after you complete an outing?
Yeah, he listens to every single game, whether I pitch or not. And even if I'm on the other side of the country, hours behind him, I always give him a call after the game just to talk to him about it. And he always gives me words of encouragement and never has anything negative to say, just always wants to build me up.
Nick Niner joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, Nick, we need to know a little bit more about you. We got 7 rapid-fire questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Your favorite movie growing up?
Oh, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Which one?
Oh, that would probably be the second one.
All right. How about your favorite player growing up?
Derek Jeter.
Are you kidding? Are you just telling me that?
No, I had his jersey and a picture of him on my wall growing up.
You're a pitcher. Why was it the captain? Why was it the shortstop?
I mean, it was just because he was the captain. I mean, everyone for the Yankees looked up to him, and he was the face of one of the greatest franchises in baseball history. So just to look up to someone like that was huge for me.
Did you grow up a Braves fan?
Yeah, I grew up a Braves fan, actually watching Smoltz and Glavine and Maddox pitch. That was a treat. for sure.
Do you look back on any of those guys and what they were able to do on a mound? Do you actually, you know what, is there anything that you do, whether it's as a pitcher now, where you've kind of taken some of those habits from some of those, you know, Hall of Famers you watched growing up? Do you try to mimic anything of that nature?
I wouldn't say mimic, but I like the style that Tom Glavine had. He wouldn't try to blow things by people. When he was in a jam or something, he would always almost take a step back and not throw it by people, but say, all right, I'm just going to command this a little bit more. And I've taken that with me because over the years, I haven't been a power pitcher. It's been control and command, and I just take that, all right, take a step back and just command this pitch just a little bit better.
Terrific. We have deviated back to our rapid-fire questions. Your favorite hobby?
Fishing.
What do you fish for?
Here in Georgia, we have a lot of spotted bass and striped bass.
How about the one thing most folks may not know about you?
I'm a shoe fanatic. I love collecting shoes.
How many do you have?
Probably somewhere close to 40.
40 pairs of, all right, very, any particular one you like? Do you have all the Jordans or anything of that nature?
I just kind of collect them all, whichever ones catch my eye, really.
Huh. One person you'd like to meet, athlete or non-athlete?
Tim Tebow.
Why is that?
I just admire him for his faith and everything like that, and just the way he carries himself and lives out life. It's a treat to watch, honestly.
Suppose you might have that opportunity this spring to potentially meet him, right? I see he's back in Major League camp with the New York Mets. That would be a terrific opportunity for you. Hey, what about one bucket list item you may have?
I want to be able to go over to Germany and kind of see where my family history has started.
On the way out the door, your favorite baseball memory to date?
Pitching down in Jupiter, actually, on one of the Miami spring training fields.
When was that? What was that for?
That was for the big Jupiter wood bat tournament that they have down there in the fall time for high schoolers.
Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. I know this is very informal over the phone, but we look forward to getting to know you a little bit better this spring up in Jupiter, and we'll chat with you soon. Thanks so much for the time tonight, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Now, that was Nick Neidert, the seventh-ranked prospect in the Miami Marlins organization. Good to chat with Nick, getting a fresh start in the Marlins organization, and we look forward to catching up with Nick in Jupiter in just a couple of weeks. Time for another break. When we return, we're breaking down the Marlins farm system in the top 30 with Mike Rosenbaum of MLB.com on your home for Marlins baseball, 1230 WBZT, The Zone, at 940 wins.
Marlins baseball.
A high drive, deep left center. It is up, up and away.
Florida Gators.
Florida has won the game at the Core Four. Finally secures the elusive SEC tournament title.
Number one for live play-by-play every day.
And they have just gone wild here at the ballpark.
940 wins. Marlins Baseball Hot Stove Talk with Kyle Seeloff is on 1230 The Zone and 940 wins. Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening, brought to you by GEICO. Saving you money on car insurance has been in GEICO's wheelhouse for over 75 years. After the game, get a quote at GEICO.com. GEICO, so easy a caveman can do it. Thank you to Todd Hollinsworth and Nick Neidert for joining us this evening. Right now, it is time to head back out to the phone lines for one final guest tonight. Joining us from his home in New York, Mike Rosenbaum of MLB Pipeline at MLB.com. Mike keeps a close eye on the Marlins farm system. His latest top 30 is up now on MLB Pipeline. Mike, it's great to have you with us this evening. Thanks for taking some time to join us. Let's get right to it. This offseason, how would you grade out or evaluate the moves the Marlins front office has made?
I know a lot of people kind of get an uproar that they didn't acquire any, you know, blue chip, top 25 prospect, at least on paper. But you look at the packages they got for Ozuna and Stanton, and you're getting, you know, quite a few quality future big leaguers, some upside guys, especially on the mound where, you know, in an area that was lacking prior to these trades. And also just some general upside guys, some young guys, role fillers, and it provides a system with a lot of depth that you see a lot of other teams accumulating through their own trades, positional depth to where it gets to the point where, you know, eventually some of these guys could become trade baits in their own right to improve the big league roster a couple of years down the line.
Hey, if you would, I'd like to assess and evaluate really the three big trades that we've seen the Marlins make this winter. We will start with the move that sent D. Gordon to Seattle. That move was made on December 7th for future considerations to the Mariners for Nick Neidert, who we had on the show a couple of minutes ago, right-hander Robert Duggar, and Chris Torres. What did you make of that trade?
I thought it was a good acquisition of probable big leaguers' depth pieces. Neidert, it's depending on who you ask, some see him as a back-to-rotation guy, some see him as a mid-rotation guy. It's really just a matter of how good the breaking balls become. It's a good fastball with deception and a changeup. He just needs to improve the secondaries. And, you know, he was young for the AA level last year, so don't read too much into his struggles at the level. Torres was a guy the Marlins were initially on years ago. and he's a middle infielder, really nice, interesting profile. The plate discipline needs some work. But he's a guy who could pan out to be, you know, at worst probably a utility infielder, not unlike a player that they received, the Marlins received in the Stanton trade. And then Robert Duggar is kind of the classic example of a college pitcher who doesn't have a lot of hype but just goes out and performs. It's a good four-pitch mix, nothing overpowering, though the fastball gets up to about 95. Everything plays up because of good control and command, so he throws a lot of strikes. Kind of a guy who has a chance to move quickly. Not unlike a Trevor Richards type or a Dylan Peters.
Of those three, who would you project to get to the major leagues quickest? Not that that's what it's always important, and that's what not, you know, but of those three.
I would put my money on Neidert just because he's already reached AA at 20. He's got a better arsenal than Duggar. Torres is a bit of a project, but, the you know, you can make a case that there's more upside with him than the other two. But if we're making a bold prediction, I'm going to go with Nick Neidert.
Okay, Mike, now the trade everybody was talking about this winter, many saying the Marlins did not get enough in return. Giancarlo Stanton sent to the New York Yankees on December 11th for second baseman Starlin Castro, right-hander Jorge Guzman, and shortstop Jose Devers. Guzman, the hardest-throwing pitcher in all of professional baseball. Jose Devers, a guy that might be a little bit off the radar. How do you project those two fitting into this Marlins system?
You could make a case that Guzman is the top prospect in the organization. I know that there's something that's been desired in terms of his experience level. He only got up to the New York Penn League last year. But it's a, you know, as I'm sure you've heard and Marlins fans have heard, it's a legit power arm. It's a guy who will sit 99 to 100 miles an hour, bump well. The slider needs some work. It could be a, you know, probably a plus pitch in time, and you got to have to work on a changeup, which he'll need to against older competition and higher levels. But it's a power arsenal, you know, arguably better than Sandy. Alcantara is a little bit more advanced, even though Alcantara has more experience. If you know, it's one of the guys, if it all comes together, that it's a front of the rotation profile, and if not, it's got a guy who can come in the ninth inning and pump 102.
How about Jose Devers? Obviously, his brother's made a name for himself in the major leagues, but how do you think he'll pan out?
Yeah, he was a little bit off the radar at the time of the trade, but you look at what the Marlins are doing in terms of who they brought in and Gary Denbo. So he, you know, there's nobody who has more extensive knowledge of the Yankee system than Gary. So if he's targeting Devers like he is, and the reports are as strong as they are, then I would put some faith in him becoming, you know, a utility infield type at worst, maybe a guy who overperforms what the initial projections are at this point in his career.
You know, you make one interesting point, and obviously that trade, a lot of that acquisition centered around the money and all the money that was owed to Giancarlo Stanton over the course of the next 10 years. But folks saying, hey, they didn't get enough in return. But to your point, and I would imagine you've taken a look at this, Gary Denbo, nobody knows that system any better. And to take a guy like Jose Devers and to acquire him in that trade, they certainly, and Gary certainly knows something of that quality of that player that they project is certainly going to reap benefits down the road.
Yeah, it shouldn't be looked at as just a guy who was a throw-in in the trade. This was a particular guy that the Marlins sought out in this trade. And also, it's important to keep in mind that it's yet to be seen what happens with Starlin Castro. You know, should the Marlins flip him and get some more young talent in return, then it's essentially part of this package. So you could look at it as though the deal isn't quite complete yet, depending on what the outcome is with Starlin.
All right, well, the last of those three deals, Mike Rosenbaum joining us here on the Marlins Hot So tonight. Mike takes a look at all 30 prospects and then many, many more, but updates the top 30 for the Marlins. You have done so. Marcell Ozuna on December 14th was sent to the St. Louis Cardinals for left-hander Daniel Castano, right fielder Magnaris Sierra, right-hander Sandy Alcantara, and right-hander Zach Gallen. Alcantara, I see here, he is number one currently on the Marlins top 30. Guzman is second, but this is the trade that really got back some young talent in return.
Yeah, and anybody who is upset about the Stanton trade, you can find some solace in this one because you've got three big leaguers in Alcantara, Sierra, and right-hander Zach Gallen. Alcantara is the highest ceiling of the group and also the biggest wild card because he's still very much a work in progress despite having reached the big leagues. Sierra already reached the big leagues last year. He's a guy who's, you know, arguably ready to take over in center field when the time comes or handle either outfield corner in the interim. And Zach Gallen is a guy who kind of like the classic Cardinals draft pick mold from college pitchers, a guy who is kind of overlooked by the scouting community because the stuff might not be amazing, almost like a Robert Duggar type, where he just goes out and performs his stuff and proves it. He shows that it plays at the next level. And he reached Triple A last year and, you know, could see some time in the major leagues this year, almost definitely.
I was taking a look at the top 30, and I believe, if I counted them correctly, 12 of the Marlins' top 30 prospects now, and you are all too familiar with this, have been acquired in trades, really going back to that trade that sent Adani Echevarria to Tampa Bay last June, or May, I believe it was. But what does that say about what the Marlins have been able to do and how quickly, to an extent, now this is not to say that all 30 of these prospects are going to pan out, and not all of them are five-star, blue-chip type guys, but what does it say about what the Marlins have been able to do to quickly and efficiently kind of retool a little bit of a farm system here? Still a long ways to go, I understand that.
Right, and obviously this is a bit of a bold comparison, but you see in recent years examples of the Cubs, the Astros, the Yankees, their accumulation of prospects, not just star prospects, but guys who project to be quality major league players or serve a useful role on a big league roster. Marlins have acquired a nice share of high-end arms specifically, which was a big need for the system before all these trades. And then also the bats and the positional talent, you know, positions that there's kind of a dearth at upper levels in terms of trade value and trade talent. So they acquire all of these guys and they're building a system. Some guys have to pan out. Some guys could just perform the way through the minor leagues and become trade bait, but they're giving themselves a chance both to, you know, continue bolstering a healthy farm system while also setting themselves up for success at the major league level. You know, not next year, obviously, but in future years.
Mike Rosenbaum of MLB.com joining us here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, quickly back to those three trades, Giancarlo Stanton, D. Gordon, and Marcell Ozuna. Mike, any of those three, do you think one of them really sticks out and one that the Marlins will reap the most benefits from?
I would say the Ozuna trade. To get back Alcantara, Sierra, guys who have years of contract control and development remaining, as well as Zach Gallen and a fourth pitcher, a left-hander whose name is slipping my mind right now, to get back that type of package is incredibly valuable. Like I said, it may not have the high ceiling blue chip impact prospects involved, but those are guys who could be, you know, Marlins everyday players for years to come.
1 and 2 on the top 30 list, Alcantara and Guzman. Where do those two guys project? How good can Alcantara be, and where do you think Jorge Guzman fits into this Marlins roster at some point?
For both of them, they're very similar. Alcantara has more delivery issues to work out, whereas Guzman needs to develop his secondary pitches more. Both young. I think they're either 22 or 23, both of them. Alcantara needs some refining, and you're going to want to keep him a starter. I know he got up to with the Cardinals when he came up late in the year. He pitched out of the bullpen because the fastball plays up, you know, less emphasis on throwing strikes. But presumably the Marlins would like to develop him as a starter because that's the role that he offers the most upside. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to AAA or begin the year as a starter. If there's a chance to get him some big league innings here and there, I could see that as well. Whereas Guzman, you know, a good year for him in 2018 would see him finish in AA. He'll presumably start in low A or high A. And if the success is all there, considering he's a little bit older than most guys at the level he's at, kind of could put him on a fast track to move a bit quicker than it would seem for a guy who has no full season experience headed into the season.
Boy, there certainly could be a lot to look forward to, especially if Alcantara and Guzman pan out at some point, and you have Jose Urania already in the Marlins rotation, so the Marlins front office quickly and efficiently trying to establish himself with a perennial big league rotation. Mike Rosenbaum joining us here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Mike, there's been a lot of speculation about JT Realmuto and Christian Yelich being moved at some point. My first question would be, how much do you think those guys could command in return? I understand it's not easy for anybody to part ways with some top prospects, and I'm sure the Marlins certainly feel like they're deserving of such if they were to move either one or both of those guys.
Yeah, and you know, it might seem odd that they didn't get back a blue chipper for the Ozuna or Stanton trade, but with a Real Muto or a Christian Yelich, with guys, you know, on the positive side of the age curve like that, especially, you know, if the team thinks Yelich can play center field, and Real Muto is obviously a stud behind the plate, you could see those guys kind of getting back a really high-end prospect or multiple high-end prospects for those guys in return. I know that it was already floated out there that Miami's seeking a Ronald Acuna type from the Braves in return. So that kind of speaks to where they're at and the type of player that they're looking to command in return for, you know, their best remaining talent on the and most cost control and appealing to other teams on the roster.
I hate to put you on the spot here, but outside of the top 30, you have any wild cards you could give us and folks to keep an eye on?
Yeah, Braxton Lee is a guy who should be on there, but with all the acquisitions and whatnot over the course of the year, didn't get a chance to make his way on there. But I can say with confidence that he will be on the Marlins updated top 30 when it comes out next month. Got a good look at him in the fall league, and guy where the scouting profile fits the stats that he posted both with the Rays and when he came over to the Marlins this year. Puts the ball in play, gets down the line exceptionally well, can play the outfield, throws, probably a fourth outfielder profile, but he has the making of a big leaguer. And while I'm at it, another AFL guy who I honestly knew nothing about beforehand, James Needy showed a good four-pitch mix in the fall league, good velocity. He's an interesting arm. I'm not sure what to make of him at this point. I'd like to see him a little bit more, but he's definitely a guy to watch.
Mike Rosenbaum of MLB.com joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Hey, Mike, on the way out the door, simply out of curiosity, how did you fall into the line of work that you're currently tasked with? You take a look at all the teams around Major League Baseball. You have a focus on the Marlins. You've established their top 30. You know many, many more throughout the system. How did you fall into what you're doing? What's your backstory?
I was a Division III college baseball player who didn't know what to do with himself once he graduated college and needed an outlet for baseball. So it turned into focusing on the types of players who interested me most over my life. And those were rookies, you know, and that kind of evolved into an interest in prospects and evaluating them and trying to project them as big leaguers. And it just kind of spiraled from there, getting to see as many games as possible and, you know, put the word out there in as many guys as possible and hope people take notice.
Mike Rosenbaum of MLB.com. You did a terrific job. Thanks so much for the time tonight. We'll chat with you again soon. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Kyle.
Again, Mike Rosenbaum of MLB.com. Good stuff, fun stuff. That's going to do it. Another fun show tonight. Thank you to all of our guests. Spring training is right around the corner. The hot stove season is wrapping up. We'll cap things off with a two-hour show during FanFest. But, hey, not to worry. We're back same time, same place next week. For Roy Perez, I'm Kyle Seeloff saying so long. This has been another edition of the Marlins Hot Stove Show on your home for Marlins Baseball 940 Wins.